バラすわよ。
Welcome to Wanda's Picks, a Black arts and cultural program of the African Sisters Media Network. And we are joined in the studio by two of our favorite guests and a special guest, Laurie Lane Ellis and Kendra Kimbra, to tell us about Black Choreographers Festival Here and Now, because it's here for 2017. Like, whoa, it's been a whole year, and I know you all have been super busy. And we are also joined by one of the presenting artists, choreographers, Dana E. Is it Fitchett? Is that how you pronounce it, Dana?
Yep, that's right. Hello, good morning.
Okay, super. Good morning, good morning. So why don't we start with Laura, Elaine Ellis, and Kendra, and you could tell us about the festival. Wow, what year is this for you?
Good morning, Wanda.
Hi, good morning, Wanda.
2013. Oh, my
goodness. We're 2 years from our 15th anniversary. It feels like the 10 year just happened yesterday, really.
Whoa, 15. Really? Whoa.
We're 13 this year. 13.
Oh, okay. Okay, so a teenager. Ah.
Yeah.
Wow. And you're going to have shows on both sides of the bay, a dance mission, as well as at the
Malanga.
Is it going to be Malanga?
The Malanga.
Yeah, Castle Arts Center for the Arts Theater. Yeah. So tell us about the festival. Do you want to start, Laura, and then Kendra? And tell us about your organizations as well.
I would love to.
The African American Performing Arts Coalition, APAC, and also K-STAR, which is yours, Kendra.
I would love for Kendra to support Kendra because it kicks off in Oakland, and Kendra's curated a weekly show there.
Oh, super.
I was just going to say that we are really excited to be back at the Malanga Center this year. Laura and I first started cultivating ideas about the festival at a symposium that I hosted there many, many years ago, 15 years ago, because we did 2 years of planning for the festival before we actually launched. So we're excited to be back at the Malanga Center. We have an amazing lineup this weekend, Saturday at 7:30 p.m. and then Sunday at 4 p.m. And on Saturday's program, we have Mark Bamuchi Joseph and Ibrahima Duf, who is the son of the legends, Zach and Naomi Duf, and Felicia Stroud, which is a great festival favorite, and her youth group will be performing, as well as Deborah Vaughn, performing an excerpt of Panther. So we're really excited. Sunday, Mark Bamuchi is only performing on Saturday, but on Sunday, Nafi and Afia's group, Bahia Movement, will be performing as well. So lots in store for Malanga. We're going to do a film showing or film screening on Sunday afternoon with Delina Brooks and Eli Jacob Santalzi. They're going to be screening their film, Bare Souls, Bare Soul. We're really excited, lots planned, and ready to kick off the first weekend out of three for BCF 2017.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice.
Isn't that awesome? You would think that that was it. I mean, that program is so full. When I just hear Kendra talking about it, I'm like, and you're going for 2 more weeks? Really?
Right.
Yeah. 2 more amazing weekends. But isn't that an incredible kickoff?
Oh, yeah. And you didn't even say, you didn't give the details, you know, that Mark is going to be doing an excerpt of Pelota, as well as a work in progress around the first 100 days of Trump's presidency, right?
Right,
yes.
Absolutely. And what a gift it is, you know, it's just we're really excited to be able to present an excerpt of Pelota when they just performed in San Francisco and have an amazing city tour lined up throughout the year. So it's really, you know, wonderful for Oakland to be able to witness, you know, and come out and support and see what they may have missed in San Francisco.
Go ahead, Wanda.
Yeah, I was just, you know, Kendra, you didn't mention anything about K-Star, which had an anniversary last year, because you formed it in 1997, you know, K-Star Productions. You write, serves as performing arts presenting organization for Black Choreographers Festival and the Kendra Kimbrough Dance Ensemble. And so and you had some new work that you debuted on the anniversary of your company last year.
Right.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Just, you know, what we celebrated our 20-year anniversary. We've been producing since 1996, and we're actually coining this our anniversary season, so we will have some other anniversary events coming up throughout 2017 as well, but our kickoff was in October, and we did, the dance company did a performance around anxiety that faces particularly families and communities surrounded or focused on young Black boys, which was a really thought-provoking and reflective work, and I was honored to show that for the 20th anniversary or to create that with some amazing artists. And we also were able to do an anniversary piece and bring back, you know, more than 20 dancers that had danced with us over the years, the Kendra Kimbrough Dance Ensemble, and that was really just inspiring and motivating for what we have, you know, our aspirations for the next 20 years, and being able to also pay tribute to one of our founding company members, Rakisha Townsend, who had passed away a year prior to that. So it was a very moving event, and we look forward to, you know, being in the community and continuing our service, and definitely co-producing and directing with Laura for BCF is one of our highlights over, you know, the past, within the span of our 20 years.
Right.
Yeah, that's really awesome. And I saw you at the Women's March in Oakland, the Sister March, with your family, and that was really lovely, Kendra. And Laura, I'm sure you were there somewhere, but there was too many people.
Great to be a part of.
Okay, so Laura, tell us about San Francisco. I presume you curated it.
Yeah, I was going to say that we have some festival favorites, I like to call them. These are folks on our Black Choreographers Festival roster. We really have developed an amazing roster of artists that we've supported from you know, nationally and internationally known artists to choreographers that have developed their voices through our artist mentoring program. The roster is large, and one of the reasons we are doing more programming throughout the year is to provide visibility to this roster of artists. Now, you know, we still feel like February is sort of our cornerstone time of the year because it's when we started presenting the festival in honor of Black History Month. But, of course, at our 10-year, we just decided that February really wasn't enough to hold what we do, and plus it doesn't really speak fully to our mission and vision to support the creation of art and really activism through the arts that that takes place and really showing the full scope of what's possible and what we present and value in our art and through African derived dance. So, you know, it's powerful. And it's powerful that audiences really look to this event as a way to come together and to celebrate African art and culture. So in San Francisco, we have for the 18th and 19th, Deep Chanel, and I always say his last name wrong. He's going to not be happy with me. Help me, Kendra. I say Bedin.
I think it's Bedene.
Bedene. Thank you. I've known him for years, and I always mess up his name. Deep Chanel Bedene, Gregory Dawson, Maria Kerr, Robert Moses, who's doing a solo for Crystal Dawn Bell, Raisa Simpson, her company. And we will have Mark Lamuti Joseph performing on the Sunday of that weekend, on the 19th. And then I just added, because of the current climate in our nation and across the globe, I wanted to balance out the power of the spoken word with movement. So I've added Marvin White, an amazing poet.
Oh, nice.
And he's going to be collaborating with freestylist Christopher Scarver, who's an amazing dancer. And I brought them together because AAA Pact will be presenting, along with partnership with ODC Theater and D-Star Productions and featuring our DCF roster, a project called Soul to Soul, an artistic response to Baldwin and Coates. That's happening in June. So we're going to have a little sneak peek of what those collaborative, artistic moments are like through, bringing artists together to respond to Baldwin or Ta-Nehisi Coates and having improvisation and artistic, audience response in the moment. So we're going to do a little sneak peek of that on the 18th. Because it's just time. It's really time to do that. Past time, really. And I mean, it's things artists have been doing all along, but I really love that the festival will give some space and opportunity for artists to really take their art and voice perhaps what they're feeling about what's happening in the current political climate. So we may very well have more artists doing that throughout these 3 weekends. We know for sure that Nafi Thompson is doing something on Black Lives Matter. Lamuti Joseph, as you mentioned, is doing a premiere on the first 100 days of Trump. So it'll be interesting to see if other artists will be speaking to our political climate. And then on the 25th and 26th, we have a number of new voices, a number of premieres, including the amazing Dana E. Fitchett. We also have our AMP artists, Ashley Gale and Noah James. We are bringing back Chris Evans. We have a brand new voice in Stephanie Hewitt. Sheena Johnson's coming back. She was one of our AMP artists in the past, as well as Eric Lee and Davon Solon. They're presenting premieres. Nafi Thompson comes to that weekend on Saturday only, and then we have Jamie Wright closing. He'll be on the closing day on the 26th only. That's also an incredible program. And, you know, it's, again, something for everyone on these programs, such an amazing variety of expression across the 3 weekends. I'm just blown away by what artists are planning to bring. We have a lot of premieres, so Kendra and I don't know exactly what's hitting the stage, but we know it's going to be vibrant and dynamic, you know, really dynamic like always.
Yeah. I have a question, because the sound quality is not super great, and I just want to make sure that our audience heard you correctly. So with regards to the soul-to-soul, is it the S-O-L-E-S-O-U-L or S-O-U-L-S-O-L-E?
Yeah, S-O-U-L to S-O-U-L, soul-to-soul or heart-to-heart.
Okay.
The flesh, you know, the flesh, you know, beyond the flesh and bone, you know, like deeper than that.
I missed the last part. Did you? Because you mentioned that somebody. You mentioned I understand Marvin K. White. I heard his name, but then I think you mentioned someone else, a dancer, or a choreographer.
Yes, he is a because he's a freestylist. He's a hip hop artist.
Mm-hmm.
And his forte, of course, is freestyling. He also is a composer. So he may very well be using some of his original music as well. He's a composer, an artist. He is young. I think he is maybe 20. And he actually performed 2 festivals ago as a pop-up artist. We surprised folks in the lobby, and out of intermission, he just hit the stage and started dancing. Folks thought he was a street dancer from off of Mission. We planned it that way. He just came in with his speaker and set it on the floor of the lobby and just started grooving. And, so he's really exciting. And he and Marvin will be collaborating and serve a pop-up situation. They're going to meet a couple of times, talk about the poetry, talk about the response to Baldwin, and then they're going to hit the stage. So I really am trying to evoke the feeling of something happening in the moment, and that the artistic response is both, you know, visceral and completely authentic.
Yeah, is it any particular work of Baldwin's, The Fire Next Time, or, you know, those 2 essays, or, yes?
It is. We have a particular frame of reference. When we do Soul to Soul, the artist will have a choice of actually a number of quotes to choose from, but the one that is framing the project is... the quote, and Dana's familiar with this because we did a dance discourse project together, and that was part of Soul to Soul, too. So Baldwin has a quote that states, "The precise role of the artist, then, is to illuminate that darkness, blaze roads through that vast forest, so that we will not, and all are doing, lose sight of its purpose, which is, after all, to make the world a more human dwelling place."
Cool. It's really timely in that the film, Roe Peck's film, I'm Not Your Negro, you know, which is sort of it's a book, a visual book about Baldwin, is, you know, in the theaters now. So it's really timely. Had you known about the Peck work coming out when you planned this season?
No, and Soul to Soul has been a project that I've been working on for the last 2 years. And I wrote the grant and development for the project we're doing in June last year. So I think, again, it's about artists responding to what's happening in our world, and we're turning to Baldwin because his words still are relevant and resonate, and he said the things that he said through his books, through his essays, through his interviews, with clarity and power and truth that that inspires and, again, calls us to action as artists and as activists.
Right, yeah, really awesome. So how do people get tickets and things like that?
And, well, they can go to our website, that bcstnl.com. We're on brown paper tickets. And that's probably the easiest because they're direct link to getting tickets, and we have a great deal of $15 if you get tickets in advance. And we encourage folks to get tickets in advance because we show sellouts.
Yeah. Do you have any family matinees?
The Sunday show at the Malonga Center is at 4 p.m. So that is our earliest start time. All other shows are at 7:30.
Okay. All right. And are you going to have your audience artist talks at any of the programs?
We are on the Saturday evenings. They're happening on Saturdays in San Francisco as well, right, Laura?
Actually, we're going to have a post-performance conversation on Sunday the 19th. And then we're also showing a film on Sunday the 26th before show, and that is Panaricia de un Pueblo, Inheriting a Legacy, and that's by Carmen Roman, and it's an award-winning documentary and also awarded Best Cinematography at the SF Film Fest last year in 2016. So that, again, is rounding out that amazing weekend that features work of, new voices, premieres such as Zaina, who's on with us today. And, but our post-show conversation will happen on Sunday the 19th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
what's
the film
about?
Sorry,
What's the film about? That you mentioned, Laura.
Carmen presented. She did a series of travels, and this documentary is about the travels and dance and art and community and legacy and heritage, primarily.
Do you know where she traveled?
Let me see. I need to go check my notes so I don't say the wrong thing. Give me a minute.
I was just going to mention that both film showings are free with ticket purchase before the festival concerts that evening. So we really want to encourage folks to come out and, see the film series. If they haven't purchased tickets, they can do so then. If they just want to come to see the film, they're welcome to do that and, give a small donation if they'd like. But we really want to, make sure folks come out and support the films as well as the concert.
Oh, super. What time are the film screenings before the
concert? I didn't remember. I just wanted to make sure I said it right. I thought she was Peruvian. I wanted to make sure I was correct about that. So that was right. It portrays a number of African descendants working to preserve the dance legacy in the Peruvian town of El Carmen. But I wanted to make sure I had the right area. It's Peruvian.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay.
This Sunday's showing is at 2 p.m. in the Malanga Cascalort Theater Lobby.
Uh-huh.
And that will be Delina and Eli's Bare Souls, Bare Soul, which is offers a series of intimate portraits of women who have practiced traditional African dance for more than 15 years. And then we'll follow that with a moderated conversation prior to the concert at 4.
Mm-hmm. And then in San Francisco, what time is the screening?
That's going to be prior to the concert, that's at 7:30, so it's likely that it will go up at about 10 after 7, 7:15. We want folks who are in the lobby to come on into the theater and be able to see the film prior to the show. So it'll be the first thing that happens that Sunday, the 26th.
Oh, okay, so it's going to be a part of the program insofar as it's like right before So the films are, you said, 7:15, and then the dance performance happens after that?
Exactly.
Okay. Okay. All right. Oh, sounds excellent. Dana, wow, you've been waiting a long time. Sorry about that.
It's okay, and I only have to get off in 5 minutes, just so.
Oh my goodness!
I don't want to cut out in the mid sentence. But.
Oh wow! I didn't know you had to cut out that quickly. I thought Laura and Kendra had to cut out. I read it wrong. Okay, so you're a multidisciplinary artist and radical mixed race Black woman who uses her relationship to music, visual art, and movement as a sandbox for exploration of identity and issues of justice, and for seeking healing from racism and capitalism through the reimagination of possibilities. Whoa. All righty. So what do you have planned, Dana?
on my best days. So I am working on a piece I'm really excited about, actually. This is only what I consider really my second time showing work out here in the Bay. I moved here from Boston a couple years ago. So I still feel very, very fresh here, and grateful to Laura for kind of seeing my work and pulling me in. So I'm super excited about the festival itself, and I'm working with four other Black women. And one exciting thing about it is that I realized last week our cast ranges in age from 17 to 39, and we are five women total. And the piece itself is to like a kind of funky, jazzy house track. And I feel like it's signature work of mine in that different bodies are responding to different elements in the music, and there are kind of overarching themes about ideas of individual identity as compared to group identity. But how I'm looking at the piece is really like, it's kind of like our play and joy space, but there's also a real strong undercurrent of like, don't mess with our space. So this to me is also timely, but I feel like the art that I make always feels responsive to what's going on in the world. So there isn't any explicit naming or addressing of the political moment, but there is this protectiveness of what I believe is our birthright to celebrate and also to heal through movement. So I'm really excited about it. It's a pretty upbeat piece. My movement is really choreography heavy, so there's a lot of content and a lot of patterns happening on stage, and it's a pretty dynamic piece. And it's brand new, so it's still being made right now.
Nice, nice. So is the music original, any particular genre, and what about the costumes?
Oh, good question. That's always my downfall. But the music itself is produced by a friend of mine who is a really talented, long-standing producer out of New York, Timmy Registered. And it is it's a house music track, but that doesn't always narrow it down too much. It's really a jazzy, kind of soulful house track. And the costumes, I can't answer that question yet. I think we're going to be in some differently silhouetted, jewel-toned, fairly simple costumes. I like to keep it a little clean and simple on stage in terms of costumes. Costumes and drama, really. I keep pretty minimal in my work because I really love movement, and I think that movement says so much by itself. Mm-hmm. And I have this kind of, like, my vocabulary in itself is something that is very connected to my identity and my beliefs about art as a space for decolonization, actually, because my movement doesn't follow or imitate any particular techniques. It has elements of lots of different techniques that I've trained in and seen and absorbed over the years, but really it's about kind of pure movement and letting movement out, letting the vocabulary out that wants to come out, and allowing people or inviting people to access that from the place of their own authentic movement too. So giving people kind of like an outline and asking them to bring themselves to fill it in.
Yeah, interesting. The whole idea of pure movement, there's a company that's pure movement, right?
Yeah, Laura? Rennie.
Yeah.
Rennie Harris.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. So how did you come to this authenticity of self through movement after studying, like, you have, like, tap, modern, hip-hop, jazz, know, ballet, as you go way back to ballet. So how'd you break out of all that to be, you know, your own self, you know, this own, you know, your body sort of finding this self as a dancer that is not all this other stuff?
Yeah. Well, I think I think it's not all this other stuff, and in some ways it is all the other stuff. Like, it is a lack of interest in imitating the other stuff, but the other stuff inevitably informs it. We're sponges, so we walk through life and we absorb stuff. So I did have all that training, but the real clear answer to how I did it is through the club. I'm used to, for probably about 12 to 13 years now, I've been going out to underground house music clubs, and it mostly in New York City, where there's a culture of expression, and the whole space is about people doing whatever they feel like doing. And it's a really, really beautiful culture that is the thing that I miss the most about being on the East Coast. And also has really formed my sense of self, because it gave me a space where it was okay to just be totally free. And it's a beautiful space. And I still go when I go back home. The club that I feel like I really learned to dance in is a club called The Shelter. And it is, I'm like a baby there. I'm 32, but I'm like much younger than like the kind of shelter regulars who are mostly in their end up, people who've been going to the club for all these years. And it's just a really different, unique place. It's hard to describe it to people that haven't been exposed to it, because it's so different from the typical club environment. But that is absolutely where I feel like my vocabulary kind of opened up, and I was able to access whatever it was that actually felt more authentic, rather than trying to keep up with these ways of expressing that were actually dictated by other people. There's like a really grand tension for me in the idea of imitation as artistic expression. And I work to undo that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know you have to go. Like, do you have like a minute left?
I
was wondering, like, with regard to the West African aspect, traditional West African, I'm sure all of the different forms spoke to you. Because you mentioned that you're radical mixed race, which means you're sort of pulling on some different cultural DNA within your person, you know.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, did you know, like, when you were like sort of moving through these different styles of choreography and movement, did any of them like sort of grab you, like, you know, sort of like that psychic kind of connection? And your body sort of like without even, you know, just sort of just felt at home in the movement or at home in the style. And I was wondering which ones those were, and where do you see yourself coming back even unconsciously to rest as a dancer?
Yeah. No, it's a great question, and it's I think that I know that both my dance work and my visual artwork are my kind of my creation of the space that feels like home for me, because none of them did ever feel like home for me. I do come back to lots of things, and there are ways that I see so much similarity across techniques. And for me, it's like African diasporic dance lives in our bodies, and there are ways that I see that come out in other vocabulary. So like, if you see like a dance hall class, there are steps that people do that to me look very West African in their movement. And that's because I believe that our ancestors really do live in us. So in keeping with that theme, it feels like what comes out of me naturally is just as mixed up as my cultural DNA is. And it is informed by all these different things. I never felt at home in ballet, for sure. And that said, there are still moments that you like, it's very visible in my movement in ways. So I don't know if that's like a clear answer for your question, but I think that like really the way that I make dances is the necessary creation of a space that feels like home for me, where other spaces never felt quite complete in that way.
Oh, wow. I love that our ancestors live in us. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's almost like guiding your feet and your body, you know, across space.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really intrigued by, like, well, concepts of epigenetics, which I don't know if you all are familiar with, but this, so, like, that's a real study, and it's a study that I find really powerful for all of us to think about what it means to actually carry the kind of like environmental and social realities of the people who came before us. And I love to complicate it from my own specific race identity, because it gets really, my mother is white and I have European ancestry, and my dad is Black and our ancestry is from West Africa on that side. So to reconcile the reality that the history of all of those people is living in me, is
yeah.
definitely something that I explore through my movement and in my everyday in general. But it's a really powerful kind of contradiction, tension question.
Yeah, that's really good. You are a dancer, huh, to be able to work that out. Could you imagine if you just, you know, like didn't have an artistic medium as like if you weren't a writer or a choreographer,
yeah.
dancer, like how would you reconcile all that? Because I'm sure the ancestors are sometimes in tension with one another.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm,
like,
so your body,
you get them to have a conversation. You open the discourse
yeah.
just by being who you are. Oh,
yeah.
That's pretty cool. Interesting.
Yeah.
And my last question is, who are the ladies? You know, who are the other four
yeah.
women? How do you know them? Are
yeah.
they from New York too?
No. So, well, I'm from Boston. I just spent
Boston.
A lot of time in New York.
Okay.
But yeah, but no, they okay. are. Are they all from here? Can I say they're all from here? One's from New York, actually. So one woman, Christina Cayetano, is a beautiful dancer who dances in the Lions training program in the city.
Oh,
nice. She's from New York City, and she'll be dancing with us. Another woman is named Lauren Benjamin, who is my closest sister friend out here, who danced with me in the piece I showed at Counterpulse in December. And she's phenomenal. She studies mostly Black social dances, but all types of dance too. And then Sheila Russell, who dances with Embodiment Project, Nicole Claymoon's company. She'll be dancing with us. And Makisa Sano is the last, who is the 17-year-old who dances for, she and I met at Illadelph Festival when I first got here. We were in a class together. And because my movement is a little vast and asks for some duality in dancers, I rarely see people and I'm like, she's right for it. So I spotted her back then, and her spirit is so beautiful, and she's a phenomenal mover and free in her movement and also really, really humble. So I knew since then that I wanted to work with her, and I'm blessed to have her dancing with us. And yeah, Lauren is the only of the four who I've worked with or set my movement on in the past. So it's a pretty new cast, and I'm loving the way they're taking it up. So I'm excited to share it.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dana, for joining us to talk about your piece. Does it have a name?
Yeah, it's called Machine Works.
Machine Works. Wow, what a name.
Yeah.
Machine Works. It's like, whoa. Wow. I really want to see the costume now. Machine Works. Well, that's real provocative. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thanks a lot for the time. Good talking
yeah,
with you all.
Good talking to you.
Thank
you,
Wanda.
To you.
Thank you, Dana.
Thank you, too, Lara and Kendra. Any closing thoughts from either of you?
You know, well, I will say that we love seeing folks cross weekends. We have so much to offer, and definitely different ways for people to, you know, see multiple weekends. We're also, you know, always looking for volunteers and ways to help out behind the scenes. So, you know, definitely please visit our website for more information, which is bcfhereandnow.com, and really excited to see people this month.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you both so much for joining us. You know, Lara and Kendra, I'm so happy you always fit us into your schedule to talk about, you know, the new show. Wow, 13, but really 15 if you include the planning. The incubation period, like carrying the baby, but you carried your baby for 2 years. That's a long time.
Right.
And folks, you know, okay. Again, for Kendra and I to have arts organizations that are 20 years old, you know, that's that's powerful as well. So, once we're hitting 15 with the festival, you know, working on that together, it's, you know, it's amazing when we think about that we've been, you know, doing our art and supporting African-American dance and African and African-American artists, you know, for, you know, 20 and soon will be 20 plus years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's just so much happening, you know, like over in San Francisco, you know, Undercover doing the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, and then Classic, you know, some of the same, you know, like Mark Lamuti, you know, you know, he is over Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. What is his title? I forgot what his title is.
He's program manager.
Right,
it's easier now because they've got some amazing titles that they use over there, but he does so much more. He's so deeply invested in communities, having space there and supporting artists throughout the Bay Area. So,
And the 50 Cents Tabernacle is happening next week, and as well as architects getting together, what is it, constructing piece? That sounds really interesting. Yeah, so it's just like a really full, you know, weekend. And three weekends of just like fabulous art going on. And you know, Black Choreographers Festival, you know, you just sort of raised that mark, just like so awesome. I remember when you all started, and it's just, you just keep the momentum. It's just fabulous. Particularly your work around cultivating, you know, new artists.
Right, and I want to give a shout out to Blessed Unrest that will be happening at Counterpulse too. So there's some great programming going on throughout the month.
Tell me the Counterpulse one again. Laura, I missed that. Tell me again what you just said.
Well, we'll have Redessa Jones and different artists doing panel discussions and master classes and things like that. I think the weekend, I think starting the 23rd or 24th. I think the 24th, actually, that Friday. So, check that out, too. The huge, like enclave of artists that are going to be performing the festival, there's really nothing like this in the country, and I would dare to say in the world, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wish we had some places like the Shelter here, though. I would love to just go, you know, sort of exploring like Dana was talking about. You know, sounds really fun. We need to have a Shelter West Coast.
I wanted to also say thank you, Wanda, for, you know, your continued support of the festival and of us throughout the year. So thank you.
Oh, you're quite welcome. I just wish I could do more. Have to have this, you know, this day job, which I need to run off to presently over at the College of Alameda. But, yeah, it's been a great conversation, and I am so looking forward to, to the films and to all the new work. Oh, man, it sounds just fabulous, and I really want to be in the house for Machine Work, you know, Dana's piece.
Right, yes. All right, thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Okay, you too. You too. Congratulations on 13 years of presenting this fabulous festival.
Thank you, Wanda.
You're welcome. You take good care. Peace and blessings.
Peace.
And breaking news tonight, in the tragic shooting of an unarmed teen in Florida. Now 28-year-old Zimmerman called police when he saw 17-year-old Trayvon Martin and thought that he looked suspicious.
Heavy metal at the weight. thought this land of dreams was your free land, but fear stole your face. Black boy, black man, always blame you. It's just you, always and again. Put it in black, feminine attack.
Was Shola Aditya Ferrer and a piece called Just You, Suspicion, and the reference is Trayvon Martin. And that's a track that she created, it's been a minute, I think back in 2012. And Shola has been living in Paris for quite a while, and she has a new CD that came out last year, and she's going to be traveling to back to Oakland, her hometown, to have a debut concert, which is going to really be awesome. And we had an opportunity to talk about her CD, Lost Myself, and the upcoming concert. Was it yesterday, and I'm going to play the interview for you today. But I'm going to read you a little something that I wrote to sort of get you in the mood for the conversation. And what I wrote is, Shola Aditya Ferrer is coming home to debut her new CD, Lost Myself, February 15th and 16th, Oakland and San Francisco. Perhaps you remember her from the Ultimate Hustler reality television show she starred in October through December in 2005 while she was in New York. Or maybe you recall how much fun you had with Shola as guide in the Walking in the Spirit, Black Pairs and Beyond tours while there. No? Well, then it had to be at the annual International Mon Arts Festival in Burkina Faso in October in 2014. Where the U.S. Embassy Music Ambassador, Shola, performed with her band and then taught songwriting and or production workshops there and on subsequent trips in Mauritius, Burkina Faso, or Cape Verde. A global citizen, Sister Shola gets around, and it all started with a challenge. Tired of New York, the accomplished singer, songwriter, and actress decided to move to Paris in 2011 for a few months. It was just before her 26th birthday, she writes in a book co-authored with her mom, Opal Palmer Adisa, and sister, Teju Adisa Farrar, entitled Fame, Money, Power, Not Required. In the e-book, the three women share how they came to live the lives they love. Through personal stories and practical wisdom, the enticing journey is within reach if we reflect on their 12 credos. Self-investment, your mental foundation, and be your own heroine are juxtaposed with let your passion give you wings. The Palmer Adisa women show how they kept the launch pad clear while they cultivated the wealth to finance the flight. The stories are fun and lighthearted, yet packed with examples of how these women have conjured visions of the selves they have become. Shola speaks about the fear she felt until she reframed it. She writes, I told myself that what I feared held my greatest gift, my boundless potential, and ultimate power. Shola's two concerts are Wednesday and through Thursday, February 15th at 9 p.m. At the Black Cat, 400 Eddy Street in San Francisco, and the following evening, February 16th at 8 p.m. at the Sound Room, 2147 Broadway in Oakland. She will be joined by women musicians, something different and exciting for her. Ruthie Price is going to be on drums, and Maya Cronfield is going to be on piano, and they're going to be joining Shola along with an unnamed bassist right at the moment. That's being worked out. Both venues are intimate, and Shola has a following, so if you don't want to be the one of those unlucky fans standing in the rain, get your ticket in advance. Although the serendipitous aspect of Lost Myself can be denied, it didn't hurt that Shola had been singing for a year at La Reservoir, and this is my pronunciation, I know it's not French, Sunday Jazz Brunch, and Hot Casa Records duo DJ liked her sound and introduced the vocalist to his friend Florian Pellicer, Parisian pianist, composer, and arranger. Creatively that day, Shola met her artistic soulmate. From jazz autobiographies, swapping music, and improvising together, a studio collaboration was born, Shola writes. In a hidden basement of Colorblind Studio in Paris's Left Bank. Whether it was naughty or nice or just naughty, Lost Myself was born almost a year ago, April 2016. Look for an EP remix on the one-year anniversary later this spring. Magical Lost Myself gives celestial evidence to an artistic union. And it's available at Amoeba Records in Berkeley, if you're here in the Bay Area, online at sholajoy.com and at the concert. The 10 tracks feature Shola's original work and several standards. Feeling Good with a new arrangement and I Have a Dream, a Herbie Hancock number, with Shola's original lyrics. Florian, a new school for jazz and contemporary music graduate, known for the hard bop style he brings to his music, cites Hancock as an important musical influence. Lost Myself sets a new artistic standard, whether that is reflected in originals, Shola originals, that is, Evolution, Flow, Blue Chord, or one of my favorites, the Fela Kuti cover, Sorrow, Tears, and Blood. The song stylist says she chose the song to honor the linguistic lineage of a Yoruba name, Shola, which means one who is blessed. Sorrow, Tears, and Blood was also chosen, Shola says, for its political resonance and connection to the continent, more specifically a country, Nigeria, she will visit in April this year while wearing her music ambassador hat. Pianist Florian and drummer Thibaut, and I don't know how to do any of these French names, so I'm just going to give you their first names. Opening chords, the vocalist sings, everybody run, 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 everybody scatter, scatter. Police, they come, armor, they come, confusion everywhere, end quote. The song reminds us of fear, the kind of immobilizing fear or terror that keeps one trapped or in bondage. The work is really dynamic. Christopher's baritone sax right there going toe-to-toe musically with Shola her voice one of the instruments. Whether singing, scatting, humming, or holding onto a note long after the silences have returned to listen, we see Shola's knapsack full. She carries well the tradition of her elders. Those singers are song stylists like Josephine Baker, Bessie Smith, Ruth Brown, Odetta, Mavis Staples, Nina Simone, Nancy Wilson, Eartha Kitt, Ella Fitzgerald, Etta James, and many others. In Flow, Shola tells us to, quote, flow like the river. Don't hold on too tight. Low like the valley. Let your pain be your light. Breathe deep. And when it feels like the world is falling down on me, she writes, let it go. Romantically sultry tunes like Going Nowhere are the kind of soundtrack perfect for cuddling under the covers, dancing between the sheets, or in the kitchen as hunger calls sleepyheads from slumber on rainy Saturday afternoons. Shola's voice is crisp and raspy, her genetic travels evident in the reggaeton hit, What a Night. The other excellent musicians who round out Florian T's quintet are Olivier on bass, Johan on trumpet. From Evolution to Fall in Love, the men are integral to the marvelous music. It doesn't feel or sound like a studio recording. Shola is in every note. Lost Myself will have folks up dancing, tapping their feet, or nodding their heads in agreement, especially when Shola sings of lineage. Quote, blue and red chords, white stars on blue, build a world around them, watch what they do, end quote. America juxtaposed with Jamaica. Black and green chords, yellow cross through, just harmony around them, hear what they do. Why France? Why not Britain? One might ask James Baldwin, Ta-Nehisi Coates, Nina Simone, Josephine Baker, and now Shola Adisa Ferrer. Spirit floats up and out as the musicians play. Shola's voice soaring overhead as if looking for landings, a place to touch down, to take off. Because she says, I lost myself. Thoughtfully, the journey ends, at least for now. Unless you buy tickets for both sets and or put the CD on continuous play. Now that's an idea. So just a little reflection on the wonderful work of Shola Adisa Ferrer. And now you can listen to this great interview that we had. And, yeah, she'll be here today, a little bit later on today. And her shows are, again, February 15th and 16th at the Black Cat and the Sound Room. Yeah. So Shola Adisa Ferrer, it's so wonderful to be speaking to you. And congratulations on your wonderful CD. Oh, my goodness.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I know it's blowing up all over the place, right? Lost Myself? What a provocative title.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's doing pretty well for a debut project.
Yeah, so tell me about your project. Tell me about Florian. I don't know how to pronounce the rest of his name. How do you pronounce his name?
It's Florian Pellissier.
Yeah, Florian Pellissier. Yeah, tell me about your wonderful artistic muse and the collaboration that is Lost Myself.
Well, Florian Pellissier, he's a French pianist and composer, and we were actually introduced by the producer of this album, who was a closer friend of his than mine, because I was singing at a place in Paris called The Reservoir. I was doing the jazz brunches on Sunday. And so Julien Lebrun, who's the one who produced the album with his label, he heard me and decided that he wanted to do a project with me and thought that Florian and I would work well together. So he introduced us, and we did mesh, you know, our personalities worked well together, and then we just started to say, okay, well, let's see what we would sound like musically, because obviously every time you work with someone, you have a different feeling and sound. And so he has a recording studio and practice space, and so we would make random dates to get together and just improvise, like kind of jam together. Mm-hmm. And eventually we started to create songs. I mean, it'd be just hours of stuff, and then maybe in a 12-minute jam just between he and I, we would find 30 seconds that was interesting, and then I would go home and decide to develop something about that, around that, or he would do the same, and then slowly and surely we created this project, this album.
Yeah, wow. Wow. It's really, really lovely. So you've got 9 tracks with a bonus 10, which is Fall in Love. And so some of these, most of these pieces are originals. How did you write them? Did you already have them in your repertoire, or did you write any of these new ones specific to Lost Myself?
Actually, most of them were written for this project. Mm-hmm. Only one, Going Nowhere, is one that I had written maybe a year or two prior to Florian and I starting to work together.
Mm-hmm.
But the music hadn't been completely worked out. I had an idea of what I wanted it to sound like, and I already had most of the words. And then I kind of gave it to him and said, okay, can you, fix this? This is the idea that I want. Can you develop it? And then the other originals were definitely made for this project.
Mm-hmm.
Some can, and actually, you know, we recorded, I think is the case with most artists, we recorded probably five more songs that didn't make it on the album. So there's a lot of different things that we created.
Mm.
And then we kind of saw at the end what we liked the most, what we felt like worked the best and which was a good representation of our collaboration. So the first song on the album, Evolution, mm-hmm. is probably the one that gets the most play, which is funny because, I don't sing that much on it. I'm speaking a lot, but it is an original, and it's one that's played everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was something that kind of, I think that was actually the last song that we did, and that was to wrap up kind of what the album is about and the feeling that we wanted it to have. And some of the other ones too have a little reggae flair.
Yeah.
I'm bringing in my,
Yeah, they do. Yeah, I was thinking about the one, is it
so
Feeling Good?
Blue Chords, or What a Night. Both of those are kind of a homage to my Jamaican background because, you know, my mom is Jamaican, and so I feel like it's important to always bring in the parts of my identity, obviously, into my music. Obviously, they're naturally there, but I just wanted to
mm-hmm.
bring a little bit more of the Jamaican vibe or sensibility into it, not only in the subject matter, but in the music.
Mm-hmm.
So those two are original as well. What else is
and
on
then
the
Spirit,
album?
Spirit is beautiful. I love the instrument, the instrumentation in the beginning, and then you just sort of soar in. It's like, ooh,
yeah.
This is gorgeous.
It was a great, us working together, it was actually my first time working with a live band in that way.
Mm.
And so it was really, for me, I felt like this is a project to help free me up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I can be I would say that I'm pretty much a perfectionist, and I like to kind of think things out if I can beforehand. This was kind of like, just let it go
mm-hmm.
and just see what comes out of it. And so the song, I'm doing a lot of funny notes, kind of like high-pitched notes.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I was in the studio kind of going how I felt. And the title from the song, not only could it mean more about losing myself in this process and the music and different things that were happening in my life at that time, but also in that particular song and Spirits when we were recording, I literally lost where I felt I was supposed to go, like what I was supposed to sing. And so there's a moment that I'm recording and I say, oh, I think I lost myself. And that was not bad at all. And the guys really loved it.
Uh-huh.
And so they're like, we want to keep it. And I thought to them, keep it now. Like, no, it's a mistake. I don't want it to be there. Just, you know, like this was just something I said, not something that was supposed to be purposeful. But in the end,
mm-hmm.
it stayed. And so it kind of inspired also the title because it was just a sense of, you know, letting yourself go and at the same time losing yourself and you determining later on or at the moment whether that's a positive thing or negative thing, losing yourself. And I think through this album, we decided it was a positive thing.
yeah, it really is. And, you know, it doesn't have that studio feel to it. It feels like you recorded it live somewhere just because of how, you know, how free it is, which is, I know that's kind of hard to guarantee when you do studio recording. So,
yeah.
You know, that's just really an awesome feat that you accomplish, you in the band and your partner, Florian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was something that we're proud of too. It's recorded on analog recording, so it's not digital, which are most, most of the music is recorded on nowadays, and also we recorded in the same room. Of course, I did most of my vocals a little bit later. However, all the musicians, I was always there, and the musicians, the four main musicians, we were all literally in the same room. So on the microphones for each instrument, the other instruments bleed into it. So it was really like if we didn't get it right, we had to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of old school style when people had to do takes and you couldn't fix it and you couldn't cut and paste. Like, we didn't really have that luxury. We just did it how we felt it. So I think that's exciting, too.
Yeah. So you are a trained singer and actress, and you studied at Fordham University, where you earned a Bachelor's of Arts degree in music, the American Conservatory Theater, Black Repertory Theater of Berkeley, and with master teachers Jackie Schneider, Philip George, Carolyn Thomas, and Tony-nominated Emily Skinner, to name a few. And so in the book that you authored with your mother and sister, Teju, you tell us a little bit about, being in New York, and you talk about sort of creating a community because your family is not there. But then you also talk about how in 2006, was that 2011? What was that year?
Yeah, 2011.
Yeah, and you decided to just go to Paris. And I'm like, wow. I mean, you said you didn't speak French. You didn't know anybody. Did you know anybody in Paris when you decided to go to Paris?
I knew a few.
Okay.
Well, I knew a few people.
Uh-huh.
I knew a few people, but I really wasn't something that was planned out. I decided to move to Paris in October, and I moved at the end of January.
Uh-huh.
So it was very quick and kind of like, okay, I'm going to just see how this goes, and if it's meant to be, it will be. And things lined up literally last minute, but everything lined up as it should, as it was supposed to, I guess, at that time.
So, you know, like all that Black history, American history in Paris, you got James Baldwin, you got Nina Simone, you got Josephine Baker, you've got Ta-Nehisi Coates, who just moved.
Yeah.
I mean, like, and probably lots of other folks. And now we have Shola. Shola's been there now. Shola Disa Farai is like, all right, she's another one that's like, well, at least, you know, you can visit. Paris isn't that far away anymore. Just get on the plane because you're coming back here. So tell us what you've been up to in Paris. I know you're an ambassador. You've been flying around Africa doing concerts and teaching. Tell us about that. That sounds so exciting.
Yeah, you know, Paris, like I said, it wasn't something that I dreamed about all my life. My mom says, well, I used to really admire, not used to, but when I was younger, I knew a fair amount about Josephine Baker, and so I knew she was in Paris at some point. And so my mom says that was kind of inspiring me at some point, but I don't particularly remember that except that I like her. But, yeah, coming to Paris, I wanted to have a different experience. I'd been living in New York for 8 years, and I was kind of feeling a little bit tired of it and felt like I wanted a new challenge. So I decided to come here because, again, I didn't know the language and the way of life was different, and I have just found that it has been a bed of opportunities for me. And so one of the things you mentioned is that I, as a result of a concert that I did here a few years ago, or kind of in the beginning of my moving to Paris, I was heard by someone who worked at the U.S. Embassy, particularly with the Africa Regional Services Department, and they have programs where they send different Americans to different African countries to do a variety of things. It could be work. It could be a journalist doing workshops with some of the journalists who are in this particular country. In my case, I've been sent to 4 different African countries as a musician, and I get to bring a band with me, so it's super exciting. And I do a variety of things. So I've performed for big festivals. I've helped the embassy kind of bring more attention to whatever issue that they're kind of promoting or bringing awareness to at that particular time. I've conducted workshops about music business and the importance of being your own manager and, like, really being hands-on. And I've also done technical voice for beginners, like in Burkina Faso, where I went, was that last year? The year before last, I did a 5-day vocal workshop and musicianship workshop with some singers and musicians there. And that was really intense, like 6 hours a day in this room, teaching these people. Some of them, at that time, I didn't have an album, so this was definitely 2015, who had albums out, and they were looking to me to kind of give them some information and bring in the different experiences that I had. So I've been extremely fortunate to have had this opportunity, and I think that's definitely as a result of me being here, just being aware of different opportunities that are available and being at the right place at the right time.
Yeah, yeah. Of the countries you've been to, Cape Verde, Mauritius? How do you pronounce it?
Mauritius.
Mauritius, mm-hmm. Yeah. And but then Botswana. I'm like, ooh, Jill Scott,
yeah,
you know, the number one lady
mm-hmm.
detective agency. the Kalahari Desert.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, ooh. Yeah, and that country is like so awesome. So tell us a little bit about Botswana.
Botswana was the first country that I went to with the embassy, and we went to Maun.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in the northern part of Botswana, very close to, it's actually where a lot of people go if they want to see safaris.
Oh.
Because it's close to the big reserves there, and the I'm pronouncing the name wrong, but the Agawaga Delta,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of one of the biggest deltas in the world where all of these animals are and things like that. And so anyway, there's a Maun Arts International Festival that's there every year, so we were invited to participate. And this area is more rural. It's not, you know, Gaborone is the capital of Botswana, and we
mm-hmm.
didn't go there at all. But Botswana has a special place because we were basically with the same 50 artists for almost a little under 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just really formed a strong community. They speak Setswana there,
mm-hmm.
So we learned some Setswana. I don't remember much now, but I have lifelong friends that I've met from this time there.
Mm-hmm.
And just finding, it wasn't my first time to Africa, but it's just interesting also seeing the connections between places and having the cultural exchange too, of also being in France but being Americans. I brought two other musicians with me, both Black Americans. That was important to me.
Yeah.
So also that kind of exchange is being Black Americans in Africa, and so them talking to us about like questions they have, and us talking to them about questions. And so it was just a really enriching experience, and one that won't soon be forgotten. It is filled with many memories of people who are just so generous,
mm-hmm.
and you know. I mean, I'm a big traveler, and I love to travel, but every time I go somewhere, you just realize how people live so differently, but there are certain things that just combine, you know, that are commonality, no matter where you are, no matter what you go through.
Mm-hmm.
So Botswana was really a special experience.
Nice, nice, yeah. So maybe talk a little bit about, you know, being a Black American in the diaspora, and you say, you know, you like traveling a lot, and your little sister, you know
mm-hmm.
she's like all over the place, like with regards to traveling.
She definitely is all over the world.
Where is she now in the world?
Good question. Right now she's in Israel, actually.
Okay, Israel.
She,
wow.
Yeah, we are definitely good travelers, and she and I travel a lot together because she's also in Europe. She's right now doing she's getting her master's degree in urban studies, and
mm-hmm.
this particular master's is called the Four Cities Program, and basically every semester she goes to a different country.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, all the countries that her program goes through were countries that I had never been to.
Mm.
So her being there gave me the opportunity to go and visit them. And next week she'll be going to her last country of this degree, because then she'll get her degree,
mm-hmm.
which will be Madrid in Spain.
Oh.
So, right, yeah, so she's been to some really cool places. Her first place was Brussels
mm-hmm.
in Belgium, and so when she was there, it's about an hour away from Paris. She would basically come visit me every weekend, and she had her own keys, and she did what she wanted. Then she went to Vienna in Austria, and it was my first time visiting there. She and I, about 3 years prior, had visited Prague in Czech Republic and Budapest in Hungary, and so Vienna is in the same region, and so it was interesting to go
mm-hmm.
back there. And then last semester, she was in Copenhagen in Denmark. And so I went and spent a few days there with her as well. So, yeah, traveling is a big priority on our family agenda.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So I really like the title of your CD, Lost Myself. So how do you hold on to yourself when you're moving around geographically and thinking about, you know, being, you know, a diaspora person, you know, how we got to the regions where we were, like your mom, you know, Jamaica,
mm-hmm.
you, America,
mm-hmm.
You know, through the you know, the European slave trade, Arab slave trade.
Yeah.
So we, you know, we're sort of like, people tell me sort of when, because of our being diaspora, we sort of find home is not necessarily a location. You know, it's sort of we carry it with us, so it, you know, so that where we go, we have home because home resides within our person. And with people that we, you know, we vibe with as family. I was wondering, how do you, when you think about it, you actually have a country, you know. I mean, you know, you're Jamaican too, so it's not quite the same. Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, your name, Shola, is it Yoruba?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, and you're getting ready to go to Nigeria. I think you said April, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, first time, right?
It is my exactly. It would be my first time, which is funny because, of course, I have tons of Nigerian friends because then when they hear my name, they're like, "Ah, Shola," and I'm like, "No, I'm sorry, I'm not Nigerian," you know, and they just kept trying to deny it or something. But I have most of my, I mean, not most, but many, a lot of my close friends are Nigerian because of my name. So it's only fittingly and finally that I'll be able to go to Nigeria in April for a Nigerian wedding for a good friend of mine. So, yeah, home, that's an interesting question. And I think about it more and more because I am moving around a lot. And as I'm wanting to make a transition to being bicontinental between the U.S. and France, I think about what does that mean, kind of stability, and where does home base? And, and when my family is pretty much spread out as well, it doesn't necessarily, even though I consider Oakland home, my mom is not there all the time. My sister and brother are both not there all the time. So my dad is there, but, you know, so the other things are moving. So, yeah, I think it's something that you take with you, and I consider myself a citizen of the world. So wherever I go, I see what connects me to the place and the people. And just a sense of self, too. I think, I mean, as I get older, I know more about myself, and I've been really working on releasing, this is the perfectionist part, releasing control, wanting to control everything, and going with the flow. And actually, one of the songs on my album is called Flow because it was really basically a ministry to myself to, like, let it go. Like, you can't control everything, and when you do, when you try to hold on too tightly to things, you know, you can create chaos. But if you go with the flow of how things are going, you'll be a happier person. And I've really been taking the song that I wrote for myself basically to heart, and I have been a happier person because I just feel like I'm going in the flow with my life and, you know, getting to know myself better and being okay with where I'm at and when I'm there, both physically and kind of psychologically or metaphorically even. So each place is different. I think I particularly find home wherever there's a body of water. So obviously I'm from California. I lived on New York, which is a complete opposite coast. I just spent a month in Jamaica, basically on the beach. Paris has the Seine River that's, you know, four blocks away from where I live. And so that's something that also personally that centers me, is this kind of flow of things.
Yeah. And flow is really, really beautiful. It's one of my favorites on the CD, although, you know, they're all my favorites.
That's really nice.
it's just like, oh, this is so good. It's like, oh, I really like that one. So then I'll, like, go back and play the other one again. Yes, really, really wonderful, you know, first project. Are you all working on anything else? Do you have anything else sort of in the hopper waiting, you know, to release?
Well, we're going to do a kind of a remix, like an EP, which is about five songs with some remixes to the album and with some new songs. Because this album, outside of a few songs, is pretty, thinking in French, calm. It's an easy listening album for the most part.
Yes.
And so sometimes I want to be able to express a little bit more energy, kind of this, you know, dancing energy and just more energetic. And so some of the songs, the newer songs that we've created, bring in some of that energy. And so we plan to release in the later part of the spring an EP, so five or six tracks with a more energetic vibe, something you can dance to, like the Sorrow, Tears, and Blood that's on the album. Because, you know, when I travel to countries in Africa, a lot of times I'm in a big space, and people like to move. I mean, I think obviously music is universal, mm-hmm. and I also just like to be able to communicate where people can, you know, enjoy themselves, especially when the length, you know, now that I, it's funny, when I'm thinking about performing in California next week, I realize it's my first time in a while performing in English, because in all of these other countries, I'm in front of people who are not necessarily speaking English as a first language.
Right.
Obviously, in France, I do my concerts in French. I mean, I sing in English. I was in Cape Verde in June. They speak Portuguese.
Mm-hmm.
So you're really, that makes you very sensitive to the idea that not everyone can understand what you're saying. So how do you communicate an idea, a concept? How do you transmit your energy when people have no idea what the words mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that I am now more conscious of because of the fact that I've now traveled to all these different places and performed in these different countries. So, yeah, I'm working on continuing to develop my sound.
Mm-hmm.
And together, Florian and I and Hot Castle Records have this EP project that's coming out in the spring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what does it look like where you are in Paris? Is it is the community, like you mentioned that when you went to I'm trying to think. Was it Botswana? Yeah, that
mm-hmm.
you you took two Black Americans with you. I guess they also live in France, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So is there a large, is this sort of like within other international communities that there's like a community of Black Americans that sort of hang together and they like live in the same vicinity? Or sort of what does it look like there?
What's the vibe?
What's the vibe? Yeah.
Yeah, Paris is interesting. I think there is a African-American community. There's a lot of us. I mean, it's not the rule, but there's many of us who are here who work in music or the arts.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of singers and musicians and dancers and painters. That just seems to be the trend of what a lot of people do when they come here.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, Paris is a place that really supports artists and values the cultural arts. So most of the people in the arts world who are African-American definitely know each other.
Okay.
There's not an area where we all live. We definitely all live spread apart.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, I think there's a support system. It's important to, I mean, I was never very patriotic, like, you know, go America or whatever. I never wore America, like the flag on my sleeve or anything like that. But coming here, I realized how American I was, actually. And that basically is about the way that I think about the world and how I'm able to move around freely in it. And so I think that part about being American can connect you to people here who are also American that maybe in the States you wouldn't necessarily connect with. And then, again, being Black is another layer, even though it doesn't seem as evident here in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm more aware of my Americanness than my Blackness in France,
mm-hmm.
Even though, you know, color definitely does exist, and this is not a colorblind society, contrary to what people have said. I think that also is a connecting thing, especially with all the political things that are happening. You know, Black people also want to find support as a world community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no matter what the nationality is. So there definitely is a Black community here, and I think we are aware of who we are and how, you know, we're moving through this space and this city, and try to support each other whenever we can as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you speak French now?
I do.
Okay. that's great. That's really great. So did you take a class, or are you just living in France, you just got it?
Well, when I first moved here, I came as an au pair, which is basically a live-in nanny. So I lived with a French family for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I wasn't thrilled about that idea, but since I didn't have, like, any money saved up, because I didn't plan to do this years or months in advance, and I didn't speak French, it was the smartest way to get in, because I could get a visa, and I knew all my needs were met. But in the end, it was really the best way. I mean, because it just gave me a first-hand introduction to French culture, and French lifestyle, a typical kind of French lifestyle, and also the ability to speak French on a daily basis. So that was my first introduction to France. And and part of my visa at that time, I was required to take French lessons. Then I continued on my own to take other classes. I had private teachers at some point. And then, yeah, just walking around and having to get things done, you need to speak in French. More and more people speak English now, but in general, it was important for me. It's always important for me to meet people where they are, instead of being like, okay, well, I'm in your country, you speak my language. I felt like, okay, I'm here. I need to figure out what's going on, and I don't want to be in the dark. And so it behooved me to learn this language. And so, little by little, I picked it up from the people around me and with some formal training off and on as well.
Yeah, that's excellent. Yeah, French is definitely an international language. So it, and there's so many, you know, former, you know, Francophone countries that, you know, that you have entree to be able to speak to the people.
Yeah.
Now that you have French, you know, as a part of your linguistic, you know, repertoire. So that's excellent. And then you can sing in French too, huh?
I don't for the moment, but I could. I mean, I have a. Hear that I'm American when I speak and when I sing too, because we did record a song in French and I was like, okay, no. Nina Simone, the thing is, an American accent here is very, they call it charmant. It's very charming and people like it a lot. I personally don't like the sound, but it's something that people find very appealing. Mm-hmm. But I haven't felt exactly all the way comfortable singing in French yet. I definitely will get there.
Yeah. Well, you could do something in Creole. You could sing something in, you know, Haitian Creole, which would be kind of cool.
Yeah, that's a whole different thing, because there's Haitian Creole, there's Guadalupean Creole.
Exactly.
Creole. So that's a whole other kind of language. That's
like
English and Jamaican patois. You know,
right.
It's a whole other dialect and things to kick up. But yes, that's a possibility too.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, let's talk a little bit more about your concerts coming up at Black Cat in San Francisco on the 15th and the Sound Room in Oakland on the 16th and the evening after. Hopefully it's not sold, they're not sold out yet. Are you traveling solo? I think you said you're coming here and you're going to have some artists. I think Ruthie Price is going to be on drums, and she is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And who else is going to be on your band when you come here?
Maya Cornfield on piano.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people that I don't want to mention them just yet.
Okay.
I'm still working out the last minute details.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm definitely working with people who are based in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exciting for me too. It's a new experience. I did that when I was in Jamaica. Mm-hmm. I had a concert there for New Year's Eve, and I worked with a local band. And so it's always a risk because everyone plays and brings something different to the table, but I'm really excited because this is the first time I'd be working with women musicians.
Yeah.
And so that's a completely different energy. I've always been the only woman with lots of men, and so I'm excited to have to be accompanied by women musicians and local musicians and just maybe get back into what's happening in the Bay Area, because I've been gone for a long time. As much as I try to keep an ear to what's happening, there's nothing like being there firsthand and working with people who are working musicians on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very excited about this opportunity. And, you know, jazz is music that breathes and lives every time you play it and something different happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then add on to the fact that it's completely different musicians who weren't part of the creative process and this is their interpretation of it. And so I'm excited to have an organic experience with this music and maybe see it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Than I've played it or felt it before.
Yeah. How long are you going to be with us when you come, you know, for the two concerts? Are you going to be around for a little bit, like a month or so, or taking off quickly?
Yeah, I will. I definitely, you got it. I will be there for a month. I'm flying in tomorrow. I'll be on a plane tomorrow morning, direct to San Francisco. And then I have some things with, you know, organizations that I worked with, like Lick Womading is where I went to high school in San Francisco, and so I'm doing kind of an alumni event with them on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
The Open Youth Choir, the Open Youth Chorus is one that I sang with all throughout high school, and so I'm also going to do a master class with them. I plan to be around for a little bit less than a month.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, kind of getting new inspiration, seeking out some new collaborations and collaborators, and just being back home.
Nice, nice, nice. So I was wondering, can you sing a little something, you know, for us?
Can I sing a little something?
Yeah, I really like your tribute pieces. You know, the one that you wrote to the music, the Herbie Hancock composition, I Have a Dream. Mm-hmm. It's like when I saw that, you know, when anyone sees I Have a Dream, they think, you know, Martin Luther King Jr., you know. And
King,
like,
of course. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But the lyrics are just beautiful. They're so beautiful. And then I didn't know that you hadn't written the Sorrow, Tears, and Blood.
Sorrow, Tears, and Blood,
but,
yes.
Wow, that is so, yeah, I know. It sounds like him, too, you know, now that I know.
Yeah,
but the lyrics are just so prescient and so, like, yeah, like, we need to be doing this. Like, wow, yeah, really awesome.
Yeah, it's funny, not funny, but it's interesting the juxtaposition between the lyrics that are so serious and urgent and the music that's really, you know, fun. Not that something serious can't be fun, but, you know, it's like the song automatically makes you want to dance, but these lyrics are really powerful and really compelling to say, we need to do something. Look what's happening to our neighborhood. Look what's happening to our community. Mm-hmm. And so it's timely.
Yeah,
you know?
Certainly.
It was written along, you know, in the 70s, but it's still relevant now.
Right,
so,
yeah,
I thought that was an interesting song to bring in the mix. Plus, I have a lot of fun performing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes, really. I'm looking forward to seeing that live. That's going to be awesome.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. One of my favorites to do.
And then I was thinking about how, you know, people really love your evolution, and that's because, you know, it sort of speaks to almost to your, you know, to your motto that you talk about in Shola's Escapade in your book that we mentioned a little earlier. It's sort of like, you're singing that, you know, about how, you know, how you arrive where you are. But it's a continuous cycle, you know, it's a revolution. It's evolution, you know, we're changing and we're growing, the spaces are changing. But, you know, but you stay the same, you know, you stay constant within that change.
Yeah.
Yeah, very nice, very nice.
Well, that's a good analysis of it. Thank you. because it is a very popular song and yeah, it's I am and my journey and what I'm continuing to journey towards and journey through. So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So if I could have a request then, if you haven't decided yet, I really like the way you do blue chord. I don't quite understand it. I sort of heard the American flag in there or something or some other flags. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, I am? Okay. Tell us a little bit about blue chord,
about
and then
blue
if,
chord.
Yeah,
yeah,
I like that one.
I think this is as a result of my mom that sometimes I tend to write in a poetic fashion, and so this song was like that. It came from something that I saw just in front of me, some chords that were on the piano where Florian and I were working, and then I decided to make it kind of a poetic representation of my identity. So, yes, the first verse describes the American flag. Blue and red chords, white stars on blue, and build a world around them, watch what they do, because I feel like America is all about building and creating, and the whole world needs to watch us, right? So that's kind of what that stanza signifies. And the second one is Jamaica, the black and green, yellow cross through, that's the Jamaican flag, harmony around them. Jamaica is really known for music and reggae, hear what we do. So, you know, this is a tiny island, but, you know, our reverberation is very far. Not only Usain Bolt, but music and things like that. And then the last stanza is basically my imagery of the world. So I think the colors are blue and green, like the sky and the earth, and the golden hue is the sun. And so just being free also. So that's what that song is, a poetic song just about identity and the mixture of cultures, actually, how cultures mix and come to be, because I'm a mix of many things, and it's more and more apparent to me the more I travel, and also being here, because I'm an expat here, so now I have a whole other identity, because when I go back to the U.S., friends jokingly say, oh, you're so French now, you know, so just this really mix of cultures and identity is real, and so this song kind of talks about that, and what's the result of that, and also the root of that. So that's what Blue Chords is about.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So that song is fun and catchy. I mean, I can sing. That song is hard to sing a cappella.
Okay.
So, you know, because there's I mean, it's not hard, but
okay.
Maybe I could sing something. Maybe that's not on the album.
Oh yeah, like, that'd be super awesome. Yeah, yes. Tell us, sing something that's not on the album. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I can sing one of my favorite jazz standards. I can sing just like a part of it is Moody's Mood for Love.
Mm-hmm.
You know this song?
Yes.
So I'll just sing a little part of that.
Okay.
Okay. There I go, there I go, there I go, there I go. Pretty baby, you are the soul that snaps my control. Such a funny thing that anytime I'm near you, I can never behave. You give me a smile and I'm wrapped up in your magic. There's music all around me, silly music, music that keeps calling me so very close to you, turns you my slave. Come here, baby, do anything you want to, anything, baby, just let me get next to you. Am I insane or do I really see heaven in your eyes? Bright as stars that shine up above you in the clear blue sky. How I worry about you, just can't live my life without you, baby. Come here, don't have no fear. Oh, there's no wonder why I'm feeling in the mood for love.
Wow.
Voila.
Wow, bravo. Oh my God, that was so lovely. Yeah, thank you, Shola. Nice.
Thank you.
Wow, that was very nice. Yeah, I'm looking for
thank
the. I'm looking
much.
Forward to the. What did you call the new one that's gonna come out? That's less.
The remix.
Yeah, the remix. Yeah.
Yeah, the remix, the EP.
EP, right?
Mm-hmm.
EP. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you're gonna
mm-hmm.
sell out. I hope you're bringing lots of CDs because everybody's gonna want one.
Okay.
Yes,
I
guess
am,
you. So I guess you ship those in advance, right? They're coming like in a big box, right?
Well, you know, you can actually buy the CDs when I was in. I was home.
Yes.
In August.
Uh-huh.
And I picked up, or I just went to see. I bought the CD, or my friend bought a CD, and I went to see at Amoeba in Berkeley.
Oh.
So you can actually get the CD, and my album is also on vinyl, so you can get both the vinyl and CD at Amoeba.
Okay.
It's available.
Oh.
So you can order it from them, or it might be in the stores. Last time I was there, there was one or two, and I think they were trying to order more because someone else had ordered some. So you can definitely go in the store, just call them to see if they have it. If they don't, they'll order it.
Oh,
it's
great.
Available on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I'm going to bring some CDs with me that I can sign. But if someone puts it up in advance at a music store
mm-hmm.
and you come to the concert, I will definitely be more than happy to sign it for you.
Okay.
But they are available in the U.S. at record stores throughout the U.S., actually.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So when did it actually go on the stands? Was it this year or last year that your CD was out?
Well, last year, because we're technically in 2017, so
okay.
It came out April 15, 2016
okay.
In France. And I think it came out in the U.S. in May.
Okay.
Of 2016. So it was available, like you could order through Amazon, and like
mm-hmm.
I said, Amoeba carries it and other record stores. It was available in the U.S. So yeah, it came out in 2016.
Okay.
So
nice.
It's not even a year yet.
Right, yeah, you might have an anniversary in a little bit. So it's perfect, you know, that
mm-hmm.
your EP is going to be sort of your anniversary
exactly.
you know, offering. Yeah.
That's the idea. Mm-hmm.
Super.
Yeah, I'm excited about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you should be. Well, wow, wonderful, wonderful. Well, congratulations on all of your wonderful projects and on this wonderful CD, and looking forward to seeing you at the Sound Room. I think I'm going to try to catch that particular performance. I'm not sure, because you have two, right? You're having early evening and a later evening. Was it 7 and a 9 or something? Or is that just at the Black Cat?
At the Sound Room?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I actually think it's just one show with the same. I mean, there's two sets.
Yes.
But I'm not sure. I don't think they sell it separately.
Oh, okay.
Maybe
Okay.
But yeah, the show begins at 8.
Okay.
And so I guess we'll finish somewhere around 10.
Right, yeah. Cool, super. Well, safe travels. You're going to be on the plane tomorrow, Wednesday.
I am.
Yeah, well, safe
yes,
flight.
Yes, I will be on the plane. Thank you very much.
All right. Yeah, I'm looking forward to other conversations, but, wow, this has been really lovely. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for your good questions and your kind of analyst of the album. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're quite welcome. I remember when I think I was like den mother when you were younger, and we went to Feather River Arts Camp when you were little. And I don't even know if you were five. You might have been five, but you were really young. And and I remember you even then, you know, real strong personality, you know, knew what you wanted, and were, you know, quite articulate about it. Yeah, and it's really great to see you as a woman, you know, like doing all this wonderful art. I remember when you were singing, you know, with the Oakland Youth Chorus, and and then you went off to New York, and I sort of lost track until somebody told me you were on TV, and I was like, oh, okay.
yeah,
and now you're in France, and I remember when someone said you were in France, like, oh, yeah, she's doing tours. I'm like, oh, wow, really? Yeah.
Yeah, there's many different experiences. I'm just open to life, so I go with it, you know?
Right, yeah.
I go with it, and I just make sure to have a good time.
Oh, yeah, well, you definitely seem like you're having a wonderful time, and it's great, you know, when you have, you know, a product, you know, like your wonderful CD, Lost Myself, so people can, like, share in that joy, you know?
Yeah, it's nice to have that feeling as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you take good care, and I look forward to
Thank
seeing you when you arrive.
Too.
Okay, peace and blessings.
Thank you. I look forward to seeing you, too. Bye-bye.
Bye.